Welcome to the Life Over Coffee podcast. This is Rick Thomas, and this is the podcast where we answer questions. Do you have a question? May I serve you? It would be a pleasure to do that. Our team is ready. I am doing a second podcast this week, a second Life Over Coffee, because I'm trying to keep up. We're having a lot of questions that come in, and well, if I do a podcast once a week with Life Over Coffee, sometimes it's just not enough. And we have forums going, we have podcasts, we have articles. Haven't made a video in 3 or 4 weeks now. I need to get back to making our videos. But we just have a lot going on, and I'm trying to get some of these questions answered to serve some of these people that are asking. And one of the more common questions that comes to our ministry is about treatment centers, about rehabilitation facilities, about sending people away for a period of time, for a season, so that they can get dried out, get unhooked from an addiction, get help. And so this is episode number 90. If you want to read the show notes, you can go to episode number 90. The name of it is, Are Treatment Centers a Good Idea for an Habituated Person? Are treatment centers a good idea for the person who is caught in sin? I want to tackle that today. It's been asked often. In fact, a few weeks ago, Mark Grant emailed, and Mark is a graduate of our program and does a lot of our counseling and does an excellent job, by the way, and I do recommend him. I recommend our counselors as an option to receive help, but he was in a deluge of information overload, and he asked a question on the forum. He said, Rick, can you refresh me on your perspective regarding treatment centers? And I thought, well, you know, I'd need to put that out there. I've answered this question many times over the past decade that we've been doing this ministry, but I haven't put it in print yet or audio, and so that's what I'm doing here. A treatment center can be useful in that the person, the caught person, the habituated person, can get away from some of the temptations that have ensnared him. He can have 6 weeks, 6 months, maybe longer than that, or somewhere in between, of freedom from his habit, from his bad habit. He can also get away from some of his friends. And because of where we are in our culture today, you can get away from social media as well. That is a huge temptation. You wouldn't believe the number of times that, or maybe you would, I don't know, where people are emailing or texting or communicating on social media that they're taking a fast, that they're getting away from it. I applaud that. Social media is a silent spiritual killer in our culture today. And the real bad thing about that is many of us don't know it or don't believe it, or we're just not going to get away from it. But it is an addiction. And so you can go away for 6 months, 6 weeks, get away from your habit, your friends, other temptations. Now, the downside, and it's important, and I wanted to discuss this in this podcast, the downside is that if all you provide is a treatment facility, the chances of it working is slim. Now, that's one of the questions that I asked Steve Gallagher when I interviewed him on this podcast several weeks ago. I have that episode here, and you can listen to it in the show notes if you want. But I asked him about, you know, what is your connectivity to the person after they leave Pure Life Ministries? Do you have connectivity? Because he sees that problem as well, has more experience with it than I do, because he has been in the treatment facility business for decades now as they help people overcome porn addiction from a bibliocentric perspective. You could think of a treatment center like going to your church meeting on a weekly basis. A teenager, for example, can go to the church meeting on Sunday, hear an amazing message, express conviction and remorse, and by Sunday night, he's back into the same old patterns. Now, I'm using a teenager as an illustration here, but us old people can do the same thing. If we think going to church is the cure-all. We're living in a dream world. Too many sincere parents think the church is the entire solution to their child's problems. It can bring supplemental help. There's no question about that. The church should bring supplemental help to our parenting, to our marriages, to our lives. But the church is not the total solution. And a treatment center is similar to that. It's a good analogy. Bad company corrupts good morals. And evil company makes pre-existing bad morals exponentially worse. And so bad company can corrupt your good morals. And bad company can make your bad morals, if you're already a bad person, exponentially worse. A person with an addiction needs much more than a treatment facility if they want to change. Now, that is the big idea here. If, conditional, if they want to change. A treatment facility can give an individual time to have their souls recalibrated to God. A treatment facility can also give the family a break from the person's problems. Sometimes parents can become, or people who are associated with the habituated person, they can become so exasperated because the drama, it just consumes your life if you've ever had one of those people in your family. And sometimes you just, it's not maybe how you want to say it, but you just want the person to go away because it's so consuming. And it also corrupts other family members, and there's nothing good about it. So a treatment facility can be a way to give the family a break. In addition, hopefully the person can recalibrate their souls. But there must be a spiritually practical plan to bring sweeping and sustaining change to the person's life after the facility experience. And I just want to keep hammering that nail, because if you think the church is going to change this person, you're going to be disappointed. If you think a treatment facility is going to change this person, well, it can be a good start, but it's not the end all. And the key is the person's desire to change, the person who is caught in sin and is going to the facility. If he is the one asking to go to a treatment facility, rather than it being mandated by the family or mandated by the authorities, you may find that a short-term or long-term facility to be the right answer if he is asking to go. If he's willing to forsake every bad habit, if he's willing to forsake every bad friend before he goes and while he is there and after he comes back, you're in a good spot. This could be a good answer for you. A treatment center is also similar to sending a child to counseling. I have counseled scores upon scores of teenagers that parents have hauled in. The teenager didn't want to be there. And I understand the parents. I understand what's going on in their minds. I mean, they are tired. They are just worn down by the grind of this teenager, and they're grasping for straws, and sometimes they can overhope that counseling is going to be the answer. Now, counseling can be effective. Counseling can work. It can work on the spot. I have experienced teenagers changing in the moment, at the moment of counseling. But in more situations, I've experienced teenagers or other people as well. I'm not just hammering on the teenagers today, or I don't intend to. That's not my heart. But people who are caught. I had a lady write me on Facebook. It's been many years now, but she wrote me and she said, "Rick, I don't know if you remember me, but you counseled me and my husband many years prior to that. And I did remember her. I remembered her and her husband very well. They ended up divorced. And she told me, she said, you know, while we were counseling it, we weren't paying any attention to what you were saying. And I know sometimes you were probably just frustrated with us. Well, she was right. It was frustrating. And I knew they weren't paying attention to me. And the counseling, I was young at that time, and I didn't understand watering and planting. And so it seemed useless to me. And she said, Rick, I just want you to know that, you know, not so long ago, I got right with God and recommitted my life to the Lord, and I'm living for Him now. And I want you to know that some of the things that you said during counseling were helpful. I didn't forget them. I didn't respond to them. I didn't use those things back then, but I was listening. And that was really a recalibration for myself. And most counseling is that way. It's not that the people change during the counseling event, but you are planting seed. And counseling can be effective that way. But the point of emphasis should never be in the counseling or on the center. It should always be on the individual. Does that person want to change? A treatment facility can plant seed in a person's heart, and that person may not change for another 5, 10, 30 years from now. Or maybe they never change. The counseling can be like that as well. You're watering and planting, but the person doesn't change during the counseling season, but they could be like the lady that emailed me through Facebook. They can change 10 years later and really live for God. And so you want to make sure that you hold this idea of a treatment facility loosely. You don't want to put all your mental and emotional eggs in this one basket as though this is the answer. And the other issue is the doctrine of sin. You have to think well about the doctrine of sin. The doctrine of sin informs us that sin is ever present, always on the prowl. Sin will never stop trying to trip us up all the time. That is the nature of sin. And our hearts are weak without biblical fortifications. And so if a person goes to a treatment facility, they are there for 6 months and they have victory in Jesus. Well, remember that they are isolated, for the most part, from all the things that trip them up when they were on the outside. And you can think of it like a prison. And I don't mean that in the negative connotation way of a prison, but conceptually. My brother was that way. He went to prison when he was about 17 years old. And he was in and out of prison all of his life, all of his short life. He was murdered before his 32nd birthday. But each time that he got out, he went back in on purpose because he's what you would call an institutionalized convict. But he went back in on purpose because it was easier for him to live within the environment of a prison system than it was for him to live on the outside world. Now, conceptually, you'll find that's similar to folks that go to treatment facilities. I mean, they can find great help. They can find structure. They can find protection. They can find insulation from the sinful temptations on the outside world. And then when they come out, they walk down the same old paths. Or not long after that, they go down the same old paths. And so if you're thinking about a treatment facility, you want to make sure that you have everything that you need in place when the person comes out so that they have a reasonable amount of protection and a whole lot of accountability and a plan for ongoing change because the doctrine of sin informs us. It is ever present, always on the prowl, always trying to trip us up all the time. And so in the show notes to this podcast, again, this is episode number 90, the title of it, Are Treatment Centers a Good Idea for an Habituated Person? I have a poster here that is titled, How Change Happens, 8 Things to Know. And I have some questions, and I have these questions embedded along with the poster in the show notes, and I want to walk through these questions with you. 8 ideas with 2 sets of questions attached to each idea. Now, you can read these yourself. But if you're thinking about using a treatment facility, what I would like for you to do is to take the person that needs to go to a facility, and I want you to run them through this filter to take a measure of their soul. And the following questions that I'm going to ask you, they're really perfect for assessing the seriousness of the person who is a candidate for going away. Now, if you're the caregiver, perhaps you can answer these questions to the degree that you understand the habituated person. If the caught person is ready for a life change, he can answer them for himself or herself. And so 8 steps of how change happens. I want to walk through these 8 steps, and I'll ask you a question, 2 questions to each step. Step number 1 is grace. God's unearned favor on your life. If you're going to change, it's because of the grace of God. There is no way to experience sustainable change apart from the grace of God imposing himself on the person's life. Now, you can measure that to see if that grace is there and ready to be appropriated. Remember, repentance is a gift from the Lord. In 2 Timothy 2, 24, 25, verses 24 and 25, it talks about change, repentance, being a gift from God. It's something that God grants to us, and it is part of his unmerited favor to us. And so, with grace in mind, here are 2 questions for you to think about. Number 1, are you truly at the end of yourself? Is this person, this candidate, to go off to a facility of some sort, is he truly at the end of himself? I'm thinking about Luke 15, 17, the prodigal son. He face planted in a hog lot, and he was at the end of himself. He was truly done. He was empty. There were no caveats. There were no footnotes. There were no exceptions. He was done. Question number 2, do you really believe that you are worthless? Now, that's Romans 3:12. Paul said that we are worthless. And the reason I'm asking this question is that you've got to understand that you don't deserve, I do not deserve any of God's favor. If I'm still holding on to this idea that I am somebody and I have rights and you can't tell me this, that, or the other. And this happens all the time with people who need help. They're truly not repentant. They're caught. They want to do damage control, but they're not at a place where they really want to change. They do not see themselves as truly at the end of themselves, as a worthless person standing in need of God's grace. Now, this is Paul's language in Romans 3:12. And so the first step is grace. Step number 2 is the gospel. The gospel is God's power to bring change to your life. Here's 2 questions for you to think about. Number 1, are you convinced that only God can change you? When you come to the end of yourself, that's the first thought you should have. Dear God, I'm all out of options. I'm at the end of the rope. There's no other place to go. You're the only one that can help me. I need the power of the gospel in my life. Is this person convinced that only God can help him? Number 2, is he willing to allow God to have his way with him? Now, one of the ways that you can assess this is that the person who's at the end of himself, he's face planted in the hog lot, he believes that he doesn't deserve this kind of mercy. He knows that God can change him. Now, the question is, are you willing to allow him to have his way with you? It will be how he talks. Does he give excuses? Is he trying to negotiate his repentance? I'll do this and this, but not that and that. When the prodigal son came to the end of himself, it was unconditional surrender. He was willing to do whatever it takes. That's the kind, if you are helping that kind of person, Well, change won't come easy. There will be some hard spots, but it will come. So the first step in the change process, the grace of God. That's the foundation upon which we stand. Step number two, the gospel is the first thing that comes through the door of grace. Step number three is humility. The ground upon which we stand, the gospel given by grace, it will do its work in a heart of humility. Step three, humility. First question, are you broken enough to be vulnerable? Now, what that means is not negotiating. You're willing to be vulnerable, allowing people to speak into your life. You're not argumentative. You're not defending yourself. You're just open, vulnerable. And then number two, are you broken enough to be transparent? You're going to be honest now. Game playing is over. I'm not just caught. It's not about being caught any longer. It's about getting help. It's about redemption. And I'm going to be transparent. I don't care what you find out about me. I'm going to be open now. So step number one is grace. Step number two is the gospel. Step number three is humility. Step number four is discernment. The ability to perceive the real truth about yourself. Now, if you are humble, James 4:6 says God gives grace, gives favor to the humble. And if you are humble, you're going to be able to see yourself clearly in ways that you've never seen yourself before. You're going to have discernment, biblical discernment, a gift from God. Here's a couple of questions for you to think about. Do you know the real you? All of you, the whole truth about yourself. The blinders are off. The illusion is over. You're not game playing any longer. You are beginning to see clearly now. Do you know the real you? Now, if you're going to be vulnerable, as I was saying in the other point, you will reach out and ask people to help you to see the real you. And then number two, that goes along with step four here, discernment. Are you willing to confess the whole truth about yourself? I was just sharing this, I guess it was on yesterday's podcast when I was talking to T.C. Stallings about how so often in counseling that people will only confess what is already known. People only confess what people know about them, but they don't confess stuff that hasn't been revealed yet. But if you are truly broken and you're ready to get on with the change process, you're going to tell it all. You're going to get it all out on the table, regardless of what is known or unknown. You're going to be a confessional person. Step four is discernment. Step number five is obedience. The desire to follow through with the Spirit's illuminating instructions. Question one, are you willing to act on whatever it takes to change? Now, that's unconditional surrender. Question two, are you willing to revisit your obedience every day? Step five, obedience. Step number six is perseverance. The grace empowerment to stay the course. Question one, will you secure help from your friends so you can stay the course? Question two, will you hold them accountable to hold you accountable to the process? Did you understand that question? Don't expect people to hold you accountable. Rarely will anybody hold you accountable. You have to hold them accountable to hold you accountable. You have to make them hold you accountable. Don't send them on a fishing expedition trying to figure out what's wrong with you. Go ahead and tell them. Go ahead and tell them where your vulnerable spots are. Go ahead and tell them where you're caught, where you need their help. And then make them ask you the right questions. Make them hold you accountable. You're going to need perseverance, step number six. Number seven, gratitude. The heart that cannot be silent about God's good work. Will you make a gratitude list and add to it each day? The person who is real serious about change will be telling others what God is doing in their lives. It's no longer about the caughtness. It's no longer about the things that were wrong, but it's the things about that God is doing. And question two, will you share with one other person what the Lord is doing in your life? Step seven is gratitude. And then step number eight, if you really, really want to change, it's exhortation. The person who wants others to know, to feel, to experience a similar transformation. A rehab center, a treatment facility, counseling, whatever you do, it's not just about you getting better. You won't be truly changed until you move from a selfish person to a selfless person. A selfish person is all about yourself. A selfless person is all about helping others. True change comes when you swing the pendulum all the way to the other side, and now you are exporting what God has done to you to other people. Question one, will you ask the Father to bring at least one person to you so you can disciple them? Question two, will you begin helping them to experience what you are experiencing? Now, this is eight steps that you can use as a diagnostic to see if this person is really interested in changing. All these questions are here in the show notes of episode 90, plus this poster. Number one, grace. Two, gospel. Three, humility. Four, discernment. Five, obedience. Six, perseverance. Seven, gratitude. And number eight, exportation. And they all work in that order. Now, one other thing to consider is whether or not the person is willing to go to the treatment facility. You can send him while asking God to break his heart during his time in the facility. Now, maybe you want to send him there because, I mean, he's unwilling to go. He doesn't want to go. Send him anyway. That is an option. Perhaps the Lord would use the treatment center as a means to break him if he's not broken prior to entering the facility. You must make sure, though, that after he returns, you have all the means necessary set up to help him not to fall back into his old paths. And so regardless of the motive for going, whether he wants to go, he's ready to go because he wants to change and he'll do whatever it takes. Now, that's the best case scenario. Or if he's kind of semi-interested, he's hesitant, he's negotiating a little bit with his repentance. Or he doesn't want to go at all and you just simply mandate it. Regardless of the motive, you must make sure that after he returns, you have all the means necessary set up to help him not to fall back into his old paths. I've hammered that nail enough, okay? Now, here's some questions that for your reflection as you think about sending a person to a treatment facility. Number one, does the person want to change? If he's not wholly interested in changing, there is nothing that will help him ultimately. Now, you can do all these things, but you're still waiting on God to grant repentance. Number two, what are your reasons for using a treatment facility? And I would encourage you to talk over this with someone, your spouse or pastor, small group leader. Number three, do you have a plan beyond a treatment facility? What is that plan? And I would like for you to be practical and detailed about your plan after he comes back from a facility. And then number four, how is the local church involved in the process? Is a local church going to be part of his lifetime process of change? If not, why not? If so, how so? Remember, the doctrine of sin will not leave him alone, just as it will not leave me or you alone. He's going to need the local church. He's going to need the community. Whether he goes or not, after he returns, he needs a local church. This is episode number 90. Are treatment centers a good idea for an habituated person? If I can help you answer further questions about this, please reach out. Please let us do that. It would be a joy to do so. Thanks so much for listening to the podcast.
You have been listening to Life Over Coffee with Rick Thomas. If you have a question for Rick, you can let him know by sending him a note through his website, rickthomas.net. That's rickthomas.net. Thanks for listening. Enjoy your coffee.